Welcome back to ITAD Talk and part three in this series. Now here is your host, Jeff Bittner.
And some people will call it greenwashing, but I'll say even if it gives us a little bit of an advantage in doing a better job of managing that material, I'll take the greenwashing title.
Yeah, I mean, and it, you know, what you're saying kind of reminds me of some of the horror stories that we would read in the e-scrap news or something like that, yes. Where these companies would be, they got the tractor out back and they're burying CRTs or they're stacking them up in warehouses. There's, you know, $8 million of them or something, or it's going to cost that much to recycle them. And wow, it's just really tragic what some people have done. So.
Yeah, those were some unfortunate incidents, and it really happens around material that has a cost to recycle or what we just call a negative value, and the recycling markets for that material dropped out. And it's an interesting thing when, you know, our country is regulatory adverse. It's sort of the nature of our financial systems is to say, you know, corporate clients are just going to, we don't have to put regulations on them. They're just going to step up and do the right thing. And I have to say that it is not true. And our industry is a perfect example of that. But when I go to other countries, we travel a lot and do audits other places. And I ask them things like, do you have a closure plan? They stare at me blankly, and we have to have a long discussion about what that means. Because it would never occur to them, either a corporation, private entity, whatever it is, to walk away from a situation like that. And if it were to occur, something really catastrophic were to happen, the government would step in. In the U.S., when something like that happens, when we walk away, it's in litigation for years. Mm. And a good example of that is a CRT class cleanup. I mean, just recently, a couple of big companies finished the contracts to clean up some of the CRT glass that has been sitting in buildings and sitting on properties for years.
I know. Just think about what
that long with litigation.
Just think about what that cost the landlord to have all that tied up in there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, the poor landlord in Phoenix, Arizona, and his buildings have been full for years. So he's lost all that revenue. He's been arguing. He has attorneys. The Arizona DEQ has attorneys, all the recyclers have attorneys, they're finally settling, but in the end, it just hurts our economy on so many levels.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's probably a couple times a year now somebody will call me and say, hey, you know, we're using this smelter in Japan or we're using this smelter in Europe, and they're telling me they don't need a closure plan. Is that true? And I say, it's true. It's not an occurrence there. So I think this experiment of, you know, assuming that if you're making a lot of money as a corporation, you're going to take care of your community. It's just not true. And things change all the time. You know, corporations come and go, CEOs come and go, but messes still sit there. And anyway, it's an unfortunate thing.
Hey, so you had mentioned that you had traveled outside the country for some of your audits and what have you. So what are a couple of your favorite places, and do you have any scary stories too?
I really like Japan. The smelters there, we have a lot of smelters that we visit there. There's probably six that we visit. We typically go every other year, but we've not gone a couple years recently because of COVID. It's just a beautiful, really clean country, and the smelters are run really well. And when you ask questions about environmental sustainability or environmental regulation, it just seems to them that it's crazy that we would even ask those questions, because it's obvious that, of course, they'd be doing those things.
So when you traveled there, was it hard to get around, or is everything like printed in English too, or do you have some? I'm guessing you've been there, so you kind of know the drill. But
we've been going for I guess 13 years. Japan is one of the countries that doesn't have a lot of English-speaking people, but people are really friendly. And there's also not a lot of English signs. So, you know, when we go to China, there's English signs. When we go to Europe, of course, there's things in English. But Japan is not like that. And so it is a little bit more complicated sometimes, and I do use public transportation because it makes the most sense. So trains are a little bit hard, and people who always usually step up and see me, you know, that I'm really confused, are usually airline stewardesses. They're so sweet, and they'll say, do you need help? And I'm like, yes! I cannot figure out what platform should I be on? We love, all of us love traveling in Japan and Europe and South Korea. Those are the countries that we tend to go to the most. For the most part, I would say. And then Latin America, I've done a lot of work in Mexico, Central America, South America, and did a big project with Siri. In fact, we're going to be doing
So a question about South America. So is most of the equipment really much older than what's in the U.S., or can you tell us a little bit about what the footprint looks like down there?
So I would say a little bit. I mean, the first time I saw flat screen TVs on pallets for recycling was in California. And I say that because if you want to see what the next material to be recycled is, it will be in the recyclers in California, because we're a fast-moving economy and we go through things quickly here, which I'm not sure is a really positive thing. But honestly, if you want to see what's going to be on the recycling floors of facilities all over the country and worldwide, you should go to a California recycler, because you'll see stuff, you know, newer models of things that are getting recycled. I wouldn't say that they're not as new, but maybe they don't turn them over quite as quickly as we do. The basic consumerism is a little bit slower in it. Things are more expensive down there, you know, depending on what the import-export requirements are and where they're getting them from, depending on the country. ITAD items tend to be a little bit more expensive. So I do see a big opportunity. In fact, I'm talking to a Guatemalan recycler. I just talked to Siri about the Latin America project and helping more recyclers down there do ITAD and reuse work, you know, with material they might get from the U.S. and then resell to communities that, you know, kind of to fix the digital divide, you know, so to speak, with people with a little bit less money, helping them to get computers, helping them to get internet access, that kind of stuff in poorer countries. So that, and they're our neighbor, you know, they're not far from us, and we should really be taking advantage of that market if we can. So
yeah, I was just thinking about that. That's a really good thing that you're doing down there, because, you know, we've had a lot of people from Central America come into the U.S. looking for jobs, and you know, I guess the unemployment opportunities aren't as good. So I mean, anything that could be done down there to stimulate and create business and jobs would be a benefit for the people and the country.
Well, and they'll use stuff that we don't want to use in the States, right? So, and they're, you know, labor's cheaper. So, yeah, and there are some certified recyclers. Siri worked on what we called the LATAM project probably 5 or 6 years ago. So we have certified recyclers in Central America, South America. There are several in Mexico, too. So there have been good inroads made to that area.
Yeah,
and a lot of the recyclers need partners in those areas. So if you're a recycler and you work with a big manufacturer, you might need a recycler in Brazil or in Panama or in Ecuador. And so you want to help them get certified.
Yeah, I actually met one of the ITAD recycling companies at the ITAD summit from the Guatemala. So I think they had 3 or 4 people from their company.
Oh, good. Was it Vinicio?
I'd have to pull up his business card.
Yeah, that's okay. He is somebody I'm working with right now to try to help him get certified.
So one other thing I was going to ask you, how many companies are R2 certified and e-steward? Because I know it's kind of a short list.
I don't know. I would say out of our clients, we actually had 2 drop it this last during COVID.
So when they dropped it, they dropped the e-steward portion or the R2 portion?
They did. I also have a few companies that dropped the R2 portion. So, I mean, I think there's a little bit of movement going on between these two standards. I don't know the number for e-stewards, but I think it was 70, 75, might be higher now. But there's a little bit of movement between the two standards right now. Some people are saying, oh, R2 is going to be too hard, I'm going to do e-steward. Some people are saying, I don't need to have both standards. Some people are saying, we're just going to do R2 for various reasons. So there's always been a huge volume of R2 certified recyclers versus e-steward certified recyclers, because e-stewards is considered a little bit more prescriptive, but I would say that R2v3 is as prescriptive, if not more, at this point. So I think we'll see a little bit of movement between those two. There are a few companies that require e-stewards, some OEMs, meaning that, and I think a bank too, that they will only give you material if you're e-steward certified.
So
e-stewards have done.
Yep. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
So on the e-steward standard, I was going to ask you, so they charge a percentage of the amount of business the ITED company generates, correct?
They do, as their licensing fee. But I think depending on your size, I'm not sure, you would have to check in with them. It might be on their website now too, but it's depending on your size, it may be, if you're a smaller recycler or a nonprofit, it may be the same as it is for R2. It's when you start getting larger that it's based on your growth. So it could be a considerable amount of money.
Okay. Okay. All right. And so what else do you see that's coming? I guess right now it's just kind of the transition to the R2 V3 is kind of where everybody's currently at, which that's one of the things that we are doing as well.
It's a big change, I think, for everybody. You know, part of the big change is having an inventory control system, or what we call an ERP, or having something that is similar to that and being able to demonstrate tracking throughput throughout the facility, so that at any point I could walk into your facility and find a Gaylord or something and pick it up and say, you know, where is this in your process? Tell me, is this data containing? Is it sanitized? Is it in inventory? So that accountability for your inventory and your processes is new, but it also allows you to be better at business. So as we're training people on getting prepared for this, and one of the things I say to them is, this is a better way to manage your business, because you know what's on site at any given time. You know, and as a business person, that's a good thing to know. It doesn't mean you need an expensive inventory management system. It just means you need to have some way to know what's on site, you know, what the status of all the things are that are on site. You know, when are you going to move them out? You know, what's your process with that? When did you get them in? So basic things that are typical, say, in a grocery industry or something like that, we're sort of pushing our industry to be better at that. And I guess the other thing would be data security, above and beyond even what the standard says, but your internal security around your systems. So there is an ISO standard called 27001 that sort of manages that. It's a pretty intense audit process, but it is really about your contracts, your personal information of your employees, all of the records and information that you have that run your business. How do you secure that? How do you secure that data?
That's correct.
Yeah. It's huge.
So just to switch to a fun note, have you been able to take any time off work or go on any trips or anything?
Actually, I used to travel about 120,000 miles a year, and that stopped on middle of March 2 years ago.
Wow.
And I sort of don't mind it. I've been doing it for 25 years, and honestly, it's fine to not be traveling. I live in a nice area, and we have a little Sprinter van that we, you know, have been visiting people with. But we are going to Hawaii in a couple of weeks, which is pretty exciting.
Oh,
and then
nice.
I'll go to the ESCRAP conference. That is if the governor of Hawaii doesn't shut it down.
Yeah, because
possible.
I think, was it last month and this month, they said they didn't want anybody to come?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
He asked people to wait till the end of October.
End of October.
But I had already gone into my non-refundable month prior to my, so I'm kind of where I am, but, and that's okay. And then I hope that we can get to Japan next spring. I have a sense that we may not, but I would like to get to Japan and South Korea and do those audits. And then, you know, I usually go to the UK, Belfast, and then we have clients in the UK and then one in Ireland. I try to do that in January, but I don't think we're going to be doing that. And it's okay to do remote audits. It's been an interesting change for the industry to realize that we can do, I don't know, maybe 70, 80% effective remote audits without traveling. Saves the client some money, saves us the travel grief, but it's not as good as being on site. It's not the same, that's for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to say before we wrap up?
Nope, I'm good. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks for the time, and hope it was helpful.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your time also. I know you're really busy with your audits and certifications and everything. So once again, thank you very much for being on ITED Talk, and Kelly, we'll be speaking to you in the future.
Sounds good. Take care. Have a great day.
Okay, and you too.
And don't forget, the best way to support ITAD content is to rate and like the show on iTunes, Google, Spotify, or anywhere you might listen.